Around the NFL Podcast is now on PETA's radar.
What? Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hanses, coming to you from a virtual room filled with heroes. Mark Zessler, Erica Tamposi, Greg Rosenthal. What's up, people?
We're animal lovers.
What is that? What is that bit? I don't know.
I don't even know. Ricky's the only one with an actual pet, but maybe that's kind to animals.
I think it was when we were dart gunning Bengals, you know.
Yeah, Erica's got. We've been virtually shooting tigers with tranquilizer darts. So I guess especially with Ricky, fired way more tranks into the furry creatures than necessary. I get why maybe somebody would be hot on our tail now.
Well, it's dangerous. The tranquilizers in the Bengals lair, one got loose on Sunday. It hit Randy Bullock like right before he was going to kick that field goal.
You know, Randy, thank you for bringing that up, Greg, because Randy Bullock knows this already because we sent him a fax. What do they call those? What do they call in the old days when you get sent something like a telegram?
Telegram.
Bullock got a telegram that he was effective Sunday afternoon banned from the kicker club for life. Because it's one thing to miss a kick, but to phantom grab at your calf and then find out the next day that, you know, he's fine. That is the one thing you can't do as a kicker. You just can't. You can't fake an injury. You just got to wear it, and we're going to get into. It was kind of a woeful week for kicking, and I have that sandwich prop hanging out there about Kai Forbath. I need him to get on a team and then kick a big field goal at the end of a game.
If Kai does not find
his way onto a roster this year after what we saw in week one, it's just not going to happen. Mm. Steven Gostkowski, my goodness. We're going to get into that.
Yeah.
We're going to get into Monday Night Football. We're going to preview Thursday night, the Browns and Bengals. Buckle up, Sizzler. And also coming off the action in week one, we're going to play a game called Panic or Chill. Chill, brah. Based on week one subplots. Mark, what were you going to say?
No, nothing at this point. I think it's a meaty show. Let's proceed. I don't know what else to say.
Mark's all business with that haircut here. Either that or he's joining the Marines.
I tried to sneak in a haircut at, you know, right before the show started, and it was not my greatest moment of time management of all time. So the haircut occurred like 20 miles from here. So
I notice things. I feel like in another life I could have worked in law enforcement as a detective of some kind, because most people don't realize that Mark has got a little different look going on. I think he told his barber that he's fond of to give me a little bit of a fade on the sides. That's new. Usually it's a little more full on the sides. You're asking for the fade. You're doing like the kids do. And good for you, bro.
You know what? Can I be really honest? And I'll keep this under 20 seconds. The price of the haircut. I'm very loyal to the wonderful person that cuts my hair.
But the price has raised
during Corona times. And I understand this. Significantly. So I didn't suggest anything, but I think there's something subconscious going on where she is cutting people's hair, guys' hairs, a little tighter to the head so that you don't have to come back. You know, you get an extra week on that.
I thought give you a little more style, at least give you your money's worth.
That is a terrible theory, Mark.
I haven't asked for anything different, so maybe I'm not, you know, explicit enough about what I should be asking
for. So you sit down and you're just like the regular Jess.
Yeah, I mean, she's cut my hair 45 times. Well, you know, when you find a good one, here's the thing. Find a good one, stick with it.
I thought Simone was a good one. Apparently not good enough.
Not a cutting hair, not that I know of. But, I mean, if you suddenly get a bad haircut, you're like, I don't need to go to the same person. And then, like, this wild card does a hack job. You're stuck with it for 3 weeks as a guy.
I got hacked 3 days before my senior prom. Total hatchet job by this very, very severe, tall Russian woman that looked like Brigitte Nielsen from Rocky IV. And I should have seen it coming because, you know, she looked like Brigitte Nielsen from Rocky IV. Didn't pay the price. That's the only reason I had a bad time at my senior prom, my hair. There could be no other reason why. All right. We got a lot to get to, but let us start with some Monday Night Football in the early game. Up first, Steelers, Giants from the Meadowlands.
Second and three, fake the handoff. Jones looping to the left. Jones, the ball is fluttered in the air and it's intercepted. Daniel Jones did not have anything on it. Cameron Hayward with the pick, and the Giants' drive dies.
And so did the Giants' chances of winning their opener. Ian Eagle with the call for Westwood 1. 19-play drive by the Giants in the third quarter, a drive that if they got over the goal line would have put them in the lead. Instead, Steelers take over. They take it home. Final score, 26-16 in Big Ben's return to the starting lineup, and a successful return it was. Mark, we have wondered, or we wondered often last year, what that Steelers team could be like with a top-shelf defense and a competent quarterback. Well, it looks like we're about to find out.
I think we're looking at, you know, barring utter chaos, a playoff team. I mean, and that's sort of what the Steelers in most seasons have been when Big Ben's around. And last year was a complete aberration. That team still crept to 8-5 before the wheels fell off. What I saw last night, and, you know, Greg, you mentioned this, that the Steelers treat training camp like a brutal exercise where you get into shape and you get ready for football through physical contact. And there are a bunch of teams out there that engage in studies that say, no, we don't want to do contact. We're going to go in the opposite direction. I love their approach. The defense looked like it was ready to fine-tune for week 10. And it was, you know, when it's not Bud Dupree, it's TJ Watt. I mean, the pressure that they put on the Giants was incredible. I really like Daniel Jones and things that I see, but you don't like any quarterback dealing with some of the pressure that he had to deal with. And your offense is built also around Saquon Barkley, who had, I mean, this is, I don't know if this will happen again. It's a little Saquon-y, but he had 15 attempts for 6 yards. The Giants were held to 24 yards on the ground. This defense goes in and just wipes teams away. And when you have the offense making the plays it was with Big Ben and a whole cast, of course the Steelers have to find two new viable wide receivers a year or they're not, the front office has been asleep. It's a big problem for other teams in the AFC and the NFC East this season.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, and I think this was one of the most fascinating games of week one because I do think it told us some things, and the biggest thing it told us is that Roethlisberger, as long as he's healthy, is going to be fine. And I am someone that wanted to see it. I don't think it took him the whole first half to warm up, which kept being like the talking point after the game on ESPN, and I saw it elsewhere. It's like, well, it took him a little while to warm up. It's like, I don't know, maybe the announcer said that and then everyone started copying. On the second drive of the game, you know, they went 3 and out first drive, run, and they got some pressure. Second drive of the game, on third down, he's getting crunched, going to his third read, Juju Smith-Schuster, and delivers a beautiful ball hitting Juju in stride on third down. I mean, that's one of the best third and longs I saw a week. Three plays later, he hits Chase Claypool 30 yards up the field to the opposite hash mark, And Mark, I know you tweeted out, it's just like, well, here comes another one of those Steelers wide receiver draft picks off the assembly line and on. I thought if you put together like the best 7 throws, let's say, from Ben's night, I think it's up there with any quarterback that played this week, not named Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson and maybe Russell Wilson. I thought he looked really good.
Let's be honest, people now are just going to roll with it and be like, oh, he's the same guy, and that's the end of the conversation. But there was a fair amount of hand-wringing. And not without good reason. After he tore up his elbow and after the surgery and then through the offseason and all the drama about his appearance and everything, that he came back and looks basically exactly the same. I think maybe he missed on a couple of throws, Greg, early, touch passes, things that weren't deal breakers by any stretch, and that allowed that to build as a narrative that he wasn't sharp early on. But yeah, by the time he was in the flow of the game and we were, you know, heading towards halftime and that last drive before the half, it was like, oh, Big Ben's back. And it's like, I don't know, Mark, you said that they looked like a playoff team. They look like a Super Bowl team to me.
No, wow. I think they do, except you got the Chiefs and the Ravens in the same conference. That's all. I mean,
I think they have the ability to hang in that conversation with those guys right now. If you take the defense at the level it's at, and then you put in not just like I talked about before the game, if he's 75% of Big Ben, the Steelers are still going to be way off. What if he's Big Ben still? And I think that's a team that could go all the way to the final game of the season. I think that's their ceiling here now.
I mean, their only DNA aspect that would concern you about Pittsburgh is that there were times when the defense has been very good for a long time. Now, the secondary has had issues up and down. But, I mean, this nasty pass rush has been around and kind of ignored. And, you know, there was a time when Big Ben had Le'Veon Bell the way that we know him and Antonio Brown, and they just couldn't get past teams. Now, those were the Patriots.
Defense wasn't the same then, though. They had the talent, and they had a lot of the same players, but they didn't perform. And I think it is the secondary. The defense last year was as good as it was, you know, since they made the Super Bowls, you know, a decade ago.
I just think the Steelers are still, under Mike Tomlin, a team that's going to disappoint you a couple weeks out of the season too. I mean, there's a lot of that still going on, but
everybody disappoints though, right? I mean, not everybody has it turned on for 17 straight.
I guess
weeks.
The Steelers have a little bit more of a history of getting to January and not getting the job done. But are they a Super Bowl team? Yeah, if they can get past the Ravens and Chiefs.
On the Giants' side of the ball, yeah, the Jones turnovers were tough, and I understand the frustration there. But it's against a great defense. I look at him, and I was looking how he moved and how comfortable he looked, and I was thinking how he looks more comfortable in an NFL offense in his second year than Sam Darnold did on Sunday in his third. So even though things went sideways a little bit and, you know, a 10-point loss, I'm feeling pretty good about Daniel Jones, and we'll see how this remade offensive line comes together. You can't really judge an offensive line that's being rebuilt off 1 week, and that's why I can't get too crazy about the Barkley game either, although it was historically bad. it was also against a great defense in week one without a preseason. You know the whole spiel by now that maybe they deserve a little more benefit of the doubt before we start panicking about that offense.
And the defense looked a little more competent. They were so bad last year that they just looked okay. I love Danny Dimes. I love watching him play. I thought he had so many tough, creative plays against pressure. He's going to need it. He was pressured to your point about the Steelers defense, Mark. Just he was pressured more on a higher percentage of plays than any quarterback in the league in week one. And he made so many good plays against it. And it is the Daniel Jones experience that'll have one or two plays that kill you. And hopefully he gets rid of those. But I think overall, when you look at last night, I looked at the PFF rankings right as we started. It doesn't surprise me that he was in the top 10 for the week, because I think he made so many high-quality plays a lot of times in tough situations because they do not have a right tackle. That's the problem. They have Cam Fleming playing at right tackle. And sometimes you're only as good as your worst offensive lineman, and right now he's a stinker.
But he makes the Giants so much more intriguing than they've been. And we yes. all went through that insane period of denying the fate of Eli Manning. And somehow Dave Gettleman, you know, for taking an entire year where you didn't take Sam Darnold, you didn't take quarterback X, might have come out with the perfect guy for the Giants. I mean, it is a roller coaster ride. I tweeted out like two videos of one, the touchdown throw and an incredible job by him on another throw. And both times within 3 minutes, he had created a turnover after. And people were like, dude, this guy's all
Browns,
over the place.
It's like Lions, Giants, stop putting that stink out there. Cecily.
I know. But you know what?
I have noticed the videos,
him.
Though, Mark. You're sending what? A lot
yeah,
of tape
Yeah, what's going on? Where'd you
videos?
Get those videos, tape
yeah.
dog?
Regular I mean, Baldy.
That's my job, you know?
Are you connecting with people behind the scenes and making video requests and then sending them out on social media?
No, that's far too tedious. I have my own methods, my own channels. You know.
One more note before we move to the late game. Saquon Barkley, 6 rushing yards, this per NFL Media Research, tied for the second fewest by a player with 15-plus carries in a game since the start of the Super Bowl era. The only other player that had a worse day, 5 yards on 15 carries, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Kareem Al-Jabbar.
Oh, yeah.
Is that
Dolphins?
The
remember
Dolphins
him?
Back in the day.
For the Broncos in week 16, 1998 versus Miami. All right.
I do want to make one quick point. Yes. Is that James Conner's injury, I think, is going to end up helping the Steelers because Benny Snell just looks like a better player.
Good little player,
it's
dog.
It's like they keep finding these young guys. Chase Claypool is going to be a guy, and Benny Snell, I think, is going to be a guy. Everyone in fantasy that took Snell is going to be doing backflips.
Well, how about the fantasy heads that took Connor that are freaking out right
well,
now?
You, and
they,
you know,
they should
have seen that one coming. He's been banged up a couple of years now. We'll talk more about the Steelers in our preview episode later this week, but now let's move on to the late game, and it was a weird one.
Now here comes Gostkowski. It's a 25-yard try. He is 0 for 3 tonight on field goals. He has missed an extra point. 0-4 in his kicks.
Harlan.
And this for the lead with 20 seconds to go. Tennessee down by one. No wind. Calm night. Off the grass. 25-yard field goal. The snap. The kick is up. And the kick is good. Gostkowski drills it from 25 yards away. And the Titans have taken a lead of 16-14 with 17 seconds to go. And Gostkowski literally looking to the heavens, closing his eyes, saying thank you to the kicking gods.
Harlan for Westwood One with the call. Yes, credit for Stephen Gostkowski for not keeping his shoes off and walking home in the third quarter. But credit the Tennessee Titans offense, which could have went in the tank after getting, you know, turned down by the kicker time and time again. But they had one more big drive in him, and it took him all the way down to the goal line and put Gostkowski on a nightmare day where he missed three field goal attempts. One of them was tipped and an extra point, and clearly was just completely zonked out and had no ability. They get the ball to a point where even Gostkowski couldn't miss that kick. So good for the Titans offense. 16-14 win over the Denver Broncos at Mile High. Oh, Mark, I mean, what do you make of this game? What do you take out of it? And were you as stressed out as I was and everyone else on football Twitter just watching things unfold as the Titans rolled into Denver territory, knowing that the kicker was going to have to walk out on the field again?
Yeah, I there's probably a subset of Twitter middle school that enjoys seeing these players suffer. It just brought me anxiety to think that I think people forget that, like, Gostkowski is, you know, months removed from recovering from, like, a pretty dangerous hip surgery. So to even come back at
right,
all
and he's
is
5 years away from entering the Hall of Fame. So right. Like, we're in this, like, weird time in history.
Right. I mean, there's got to be time. There might be moments in life when you think, why did I do this?
He got
$500,000 guaranteed. So there is a reason to do it. But watching it unfold on television, I was so happy he made that final kick because it doesn't erase everything that came before. But it kind of does with kickers. You kind of just remember the last thing. But I'm not sure. It might not erase his employment situation with another bad day. Ooh. Or even sooner.
Right. I really wanted him to make that kick. But I was loving the chaos. And Gostkowski, to me, was just part of it. But I live for this sort of... it was so ugly. It was perfect as the second primetime game on Monday night. It was made for that. I expected a lot more games in week one to look like this, which was totally sloppy on both sides. So I wouldn't say it was fun all the time, but it just kept giving you enough storylines and crazy Drew Lock plays and Ryan Tannehill looking like he's going to get decapitated every other quarter that, like, I didn't mind how ugly it was because it was entertaining. And all I could think was, like, man, the Titans were sloppy. Everything, like, I expected the Broncos to be sloppy a little bit, and they were missing Boye, their best cornerback. So they're starting two rookies. Neither one of them seems drafted highly. One of them seems undrafted. A guy, Bryce Callahan, who didn't play all of last year at cornerback. He can't take advantage of that. There's no Von Miller. There's no Cortland Sutton, who's your best offensive player. There's no Philip Lindsay. There's no KJ Hamler, the guy you're all excited about. And still, it's like if Jerry Jeudy didn't drop a couple passes, the Broncos would have stolen this game away. And yeah, Gostkowski was part of it, but there was almost nothing about the Titans to me, if you're a Titans fan, that made you feel good, other than it's week one and you escaped with a road, quote unquote, victory, and you're on your way.
You're playing the late Monday night game. You're going to Denver. And again, there's like 500 people in the crowd. So it's a different type of road assignment. But still, you lose Rashawn Evans to that ejection. And he's such an important part of their defense. I thought the Titans were fine. I thought it was a sloppy week one game in a weird year. And the fact that I was more impressed with their mettle to get out of there with the win, because it seemed like it was doomed. Once Gostkowski missed the second extra point, his extra point, it was like, oh my God, you know what's going to happen. Sure enough, the Broncos go right down the field and take the lead. And you think that's that. So I give him credit for that. And, you know, Derrick Henry has 36 touches in this game. So they, even when the run game wasn't necessarily working, they just stayed true to their ways and just kept on pounding the ball to him. I thought this was kind of like one of those March Madness games where it's survive in advance and right. then try yeah, to work on prettying things up in week two.
Right. I do have a question for Greg, because Greg, I mean, I think that, you know, your wheelhouse became the story of the game, I think, over the final couple minutes. One quick note first, though. Dan, I think the jury was out on Drew Lock. I really love what I see. I love this guy. And Jerry Jeudy had the drops, but I got to say that Jerry Jeudy, to me, when the next time around when he catches those, this is a star in the making. I mean, you can just see from the slot he is getting open over and over. And I get that, you know, you don't have, like, it's week one, it's sloppy, but this guy, to me, has star wide receiver written all over him. This whole offense, when they get healthy and they get these guys back, is going to be a late season monster that just drops some upsets and bombs on people and maybe sneaks in a playoff spot. But Vic Fangio overseeing the whole thing, Greg, the final 3 minutes, people are all over it today. And I think there's different schools of thoughts on how you handle
it. Is there?
I've heard people say, you know, Belichick likes to slow play a team that's having issues and let them creep down the field and make their own mistakes. In this case, I think Fangio did not handle this well because he didn't give his offense. And you saw Locke shaking his head with when he had about 8 seconds to go out there at the end saying, give me a break here.
Let's hear from Fangio before we hear from Greg.
Oh,
when Henry got 13 yards down to our 16, I should have called timeout there. That was the one I missed.
He wore it. He knows he messed up because they should have gotten the ball back with at least like a minute to play, right, Greg, and maybe a timeout, and then you have a great kicker in Brandon McManus who just got a contract extension and he can kick in Denver, and you basically kicked away that opportunity. It was like a common sense error, which is unsettling.
Right. I mean, he owned it, but he owned it the next day. He didn't exactly own it after the fact because he didn't even understand at that point what he had done wrong, which is the problem. And he said on Tuesday that he didn't make the right call because he was too busy thinking about calling the next defensive play. And I always say this, I don't like these defensive play callers being the head coach, because I think you really need to have your P's and Q's and know what's going on in terms of game management situation. And Fangio was terrible at it last year too. Like, these coaches, they're all about, oh, we work so hard. We work 100 hours. We prepare for every scenario. And it's like, yeah, but you're like worse at that scenario, which is so important, than a guy playing Madden. And I know there's more pressure and it's a lot, but that's why you should be preparing that. Like, are you spending 2 hours on that during the week? I don't think so. Not only did he blow that situation, but the thing I thought was crazy, no one really paid any attention to. They used 40 seconds on the drive before that. They got the ball. That game was over when they got the ball back over midfield. Jeudy drops a pass that would have ended the game. And I'm with you. Jeudy looks like an unbelievable talent who's going to be.
He jumped off the screen.
He's unreal. He reminds me of, I don't know, Antonio Brown, I guess would be the closest thing to it. And then they go on 3rd and 8, they go hero ball, and they decide to go for a touchdown throw over the top. And you know, it was a pretty good call. Block had him wide open, and they would have been dancing in the Denver streets that they went for a 40-yard touchdown with 3 minutes to go. But Locke throws it into the first, part of the stand. It wasn't even close.
I thought Locke was okay, Mark.
He was fine. He had some good plays and some bad. That's what he does.
I think I'm still in the same kind of holding pattern with him. Because, yeah, you're right. If he – forget about even winning the game with that deep pass, which he missed. You're right, though. If Jeudy doesn't have that second drop, we're probably talking about a totally different situation here. But that's football. But I did like what I saw from him, and I think I agree with you that if you get Cortland Sutton back and Jeudy continues to develop, because he really did jump off the screen. Like, the way he came out of those breaks and just – it reminded me actually of, like, a young Odell Beckham, where when he had the ball in his hands, it was like, uh-oh, watch out, because this guy's just doing things that other guys on the field can't do.
You can
just
see it. I mean, I think, you know, like a 12-year-old could look at that and say, what is happening with this player versus other wide receivers? Mm. I mean, he's that special to the eyes.
I wrote about Locke and Daniel Jones, though, and I here's the thing why I like them this much. They're fun to watch.
Right.
I did a feature on them because it's, to me, like, they're making two teams that were pretty tough to watch as quarterbacks a lot of fun. So I think Locke, it'll be a roller coaster ride, but he's going to give you some stuff.
And Mike Vrabel said Tuesday the Titans have a, quote, lot of faith in Steven Gostkowski after the kicker's rough debut. Ooh. I I meant it. I tweeted this, that in that exact moment, and don't get on me with, oh, but what about the suffering in this part of the world? Calm down. In that exact moment, there was no one I would rather be anyone else in the world than Gostkowski when he saw every camera on the sideline trained on him, none of his teammates talking to him, knowing that he was the story of the night. It was week one, prime time. And then you can't go in a hole and hide. And then when they showed him on the bench taking his cleats off, like it did, it was bad enough that it crossed my mind, I wonder if he's just walking out. Like it was at that level of the human feeling.
Vontae Davis.
All right. That's it for Monday Night Football discussion. Let's have some fun. Let's do this. All right. So a lot of good things happened in week one. A lot of reasons for teams to be excited. Then there's the flip side of it. Teams that things didn't work out how they had hoped in week one. And what we're going to try to do here in a segment we call Panic or Chill, Bro, is figure out which one of the negative outcomes of week one is a harbinger of doom and which one should be more of like, okay, let's let things breathe a little bit. Most likely it won't be as bad as it looks. So we'll go around the horn here. I'll get it going and I will present it to both you boys. And then I'll chime in with my thoughts as well. But I'll start right here because it was a conversation on the podcast on Sunday night. Phil Rivers and the interceptions that killed the Colts against the Jaguars in the big upset of the week. I watched the game yesterday as part of my power rankings duties, and it did. It was exactly what I kind of imagined it was based on the way it was being described. It was Rivers trying to force things and make things happen, and it kind of stood out in contrast with the other quarterback, Gardner Minshew, who took what the defense gave him and just executed well. So Rivers even stood out more. Is this, to you guys, a sign that the Colts are in serious trouble because Rivers is going to just be this flawed guy that costs them multiple games this year? Panic or chill?
I want Mark to go first because I feel like my answer is too obvious. You know where I'm going with this.
Here's the thing. Like, I think you kind of know what you're getting in Phillip Rivers and the good with the bad. And, you know, this is not the greatest version of Phillip Rivers. And I would imagine the Colts excel at self-scouting, and they know that you're going to get... I like that you said that Minshew kind of gave what the defense... took what the defense gave him, where I think Phillip Rivers is just going to... He's going to give things to the offense and the defense. That's just who Phillip Rivers sort of is. I'm not in a panic mode because I'm kind of used to this version of Phillip Rivers, and I think it's going to help them to unleash Jonathan Taylor if Jonathan Taylor is what we think they are. Their offense has a lot of young pieces. T.Y. Hilton can still play. I think he looked good. So I'm not ready. They have a great offensive line. I want to see this thing kind of carry out for a month. But I'll tell you this. I'm not like, hey, no matter what happens, I'm not going to panic all year. I think this is a one-year scenario for Phillip Rivers. And then I think they move on after this, and barring something really special. I just do. And so, you know, to me...
Panic
like, you
or
can't
chill, Mark.
I'm chilling because the other option is you put in Jacoby Brissett. Like, no. No.
Well, you could just panic and not expect it to go well.
I'm not panicking, though.
All right. You know where I'm going. I'm chilling. Chill is probably the wrong word because I'm just enjoying. I'm ready for the roller coaster ride. And, I am a little concerned that those interceptions were totally on Rivers. And I went back to watch it, too, kind of hoping that there was going to be some, you know, secondary reasons for him. But especially the way that they happened, when they happened, they turned the momentum of the game, and otherwise they would have won it. I am chilling, though, because, man, the offense looks so good otherwise. Yeah, the matchup was good, and he was protected well. I think he's going to be protected well each week. And Wes has gotten on Rivers' arm strength, and to me, he's at his best throwing intermediate and deep down the field. At least he has, you know, throughout his career. And he had a 27, 30-yard rope to the opposite hash mark early in that game on a dime to T.Y. Hilton that made me not worried about his arm strength at all. He had another one. I mean, that is the hardest throw for quarterbacks to make. I'm not saying he's Aaron Rodgers, but he looked in sync. He showed anticipation. The arm looked good. I think he you look, you could tell he's been in this offense before, and I think it's going to be a very dangerous offense. He can't keep doing that. So if you're right, if we're having this conversation in October, then I'll start. Then I'll be panicking. But I am giving him a 1 week. Like, okay, he's going to have these games, but throwing 15 interceptions and having this kind of season, that's okay for me. Throwing 22, 23, it's a big difference. And it was he was a big part of the reason they lost. It was a killer.
I'm going to hold my panic for another week or so, but it certainly is a bit foreboding. So I'm chilled, but I'm also like, I'm not so chilled. I'm just going to let the public think I am. And that's the way Colts fans probably feel right now. Greg, you're up.
All right. I'm going to go with the Saints offense and Drew Brees. And this has been something Wes has talked about, certainly when it comes to Drew Brees' arm strength. But, you know, since we talked with our listeners, Michael Thomas, it's been revealed, has a high ankle sprain. He's supposedly going to play through it or try to. That doesn't sound like a good idea. Let's get this guy healthy. But I'm wondering if you guys are panicking or chilling about a Saints offense, especially the passing attack, where everything seems pretty close to the line of scrimmage and the defense, at least on Sunday, knew it. Dan, panic or chill?
Chill. I'm a hard chill on this one, and it's not because I don't... that's how I feel inside. It's not because I don't respect the punditry of someone like a Chris Wessling, who I think is making sense when he says that Drew Brees' arm strength is becoming an increasingly big issue, and it does make me think when Sean Payton is so going out of his way after the game to put the blame on him and say it was the worst game plan I've ever had. Mm. It makes me think that maybe he's covering for his boy because he knows that's important, especially this time of year. That said, Brees to me is still a guy in an offense that he's super comfortable with that's going to be in positive game situations because of the defense. And if anybody is going to say they're shocked if he throws three or four touchdowns in his next game, you're lying, because it's too simple to be like, oh yeah, they had 270 total yards. Now it's locked in. He's Peyton Manning in that final Broncos year. He stinks. I don't think he's there yet. And maybe he is, but right now I'm going to say it'd be more likely to me that he has a big game in week two and all these narratives go out the door for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, I'm chilling, because if I'm panicking over this, I'm probably panicking about how to pour myself a cup of water in the kitchen. I mean, this is the Saints. I really think that Sean Payton is the best schemer offensively in the league. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, if you really get into a pinch, you can come in and use packages with Jameis Winston. You can use Taysom Hill
panic
to throw deep. No, I'm just saying, if you get into a real pinch down the stretch,
that's a sneaky panic.
I'm not panicking over Drew Brees, though, because I think this isn't that different of a version of Drew Brees than we had a year ago. I don't. And if you have a healthy Alvin Kamara, he'll be used as well as he would on any offense in the league. So, you know, I think that they're going to be the best offense, you know, just book it right now? No. But I'm not panicking. There's not a panic situation. I could look at 12 other offenses to panic around. Mm.
Are you guys worried about anything? You're also chilling.
I mean, I'm going to go ahead and panic because there's been too much chilling. That's what I say. Let's panic.
Oh, there's panic in the streets.
I mean, here's the thing with the Saints offense. I'm panicking to the point is the old Saints offense going to be back, and do I believe that it's going to stay that way? They've had these stretches over the last 2 years, especially last year, where they didn't look great. And then at the end of last year, man, they were scoring a ton of points and it was going great. But I think the way the roster is constructed, their interior line really struggled against Tampa. And maybe that was a matchup thing, but if you can't protect Drew Brees up the middle, then he starts looking ordinary, and there's not a lot of deep speed here. Emmanuel Sanders played less in that game than Tre'Quan Smith. I think they can win games because they've got such a good defense and special team. But in terms of like high-flying old Saints, let's just have some good old fun week one overreaction panic.
I don't believe it. I think you're just trying to add
I
some
don't think you're panicking.
Balance in the segment.
I have real concerns that they're not going to be like a top five type of offense, or even, you know, necessarily top 10. I am maybe overreacting, but I really do believe that.
Okay. So I guess it all kind of depends on perspective. If the days of a top five Drew Brees offense are over, I could buy that. top 10 even. Okay.
That'd be the worst Saints offense under Drew Brees and Sean Payton.
But you know what? That wouldn't be time to panic. It's if they end up being in the 20s or something, and all of a sudden the offense is an actual liability. And I feel like we're still going to be far off from that, but we'll find out. The Michael Thomas injury is a problem because a high ankle sprain is something that could linger and it could mess up a whole season. All right, Mark, you're up next.
All right, San Francisco. We know they have their issues, but I want to focus on Jimmy G. If you go back and look at that game, he's lucky that he didn't have an interception on a basically it was wiped out by penalty. It was a terrible pick while he was on the move. Not a great look for Jimmy G. He had the fourth and five meltdown at the end of the game where they had a chance to win and he just threw a terrible pass. And to the point where, you know, the play-by-play guy and the color guy basically said, that's just on Jimmy G. And, you know, I could throw in other examples. And we've seen little things from Jimmy G here and there. And that five-game sample that started his career in San Francisco feels about 25 years ago. Are we panicking or are we chilling on Jimmy G as the guy in San Francisco?
I'm ready to panic on this one.
Ooh.
This might be bad. This might be bad.
This might be bad.
Good one, Ricky. I was definitely taken aback by his performance on Sunday. And I know that the wide receiver situation is bad there right now. So you got to factor that in. I think the wide receivers accounted for 41 yards total. Against the Cardinals, and the Cardinals are not anyone's definition of a top secondary in the league. But there are three throws that kind of stuck with me. One is the one that injured George Kittle, which was a throw into the flat that was high that his star tight end had to go up to get, and he came down, and now he's got a sprained knee, and we'll see how he recovers from that. Two was the miss to Kendrick Bourne that would have given the Niners a win. He undershot the throw and allowed the defender to get back into the play. Patrick Peterson knocked the ball away. That should have been a gimme touchdown. And three, the fourth and four with the game on the line where he threw it late and behind his receiver. And maybe it's just a bad game, but it does feel like he's just a hot and cold guy. And we talk about it on this pod a lot, that he has a genius offensive coordinator on his side. Maybe I'm expecting a little bit more progress, even with a offense that is compromised by injury. So I don't think it's too soon to panic that you might just have like a guy at quarterback and not the guy.
Yeah, I'm going to sprinkle like a mild amount of panic. I've just been at this slow, steady panic when it comes to Jimmy G for a while. And week one, you know, kind of confirmed my priors, which is that he's just always like a step late, a beat late. You know, it's a timing offense, and you can hear it in Kyle Shanahan's voice, and that's partly why I've got the mild bit of panic, because it feels like Kyle Shanahan has a mild bit of panic, and that's I don't know if this is a conspiracy theory.
Good.
You know, you hear whispers, but I buy into them that there's just like a little bit of a disconnect.
You think there's friction between them?
No,
I do. You know what, Greg? I think you're right, and that's why I kind of brought it up. The panic for me comes from the fact that I think that the Shanahans have been good head coaches because they are a tad cutthroat, and you've got to make the right decision. And this is Kyle Shanahan's Super Bowl window in San Francisco. I'm not saying you can make a change right now, but I do agree with the sprinkling of panic that this is not the guy we thought we had when we signed him after a small sample size to a massive extension.
And he had...
Now,
yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I think that we can look at the most recent game. I pointed a few things out. You point a few things out. Greg points a few things out. It seems to happen from game to game.
And then he'll have a stretch where he is awesome, and it's like it kind of allays all the fears, and everybody calms down, and then a game like this pops up again. So can he iron that inconsistency out of his game? Ricky, why don't you give us one?
I was going to say maybe Belichick can see the future.
Oh, stop it.
Please, he wanted him.
Okay, so how do you guys feel about Deshaun Watson without DeAndre Hopkins? Dating back to last season, Watson now has four consecutive games with a sub-100 passer rating, the longest such streak of his career. Panic or chill?
I couldn't be chilling anymore. I mean, QB rating garbage stat. Plus 100's pretty high, so I don't even know what that means. Billy O'Brien, if he does one thing well, he'll scheme up a little more offense in a passing game than you think. Before Deshaun Watson, post Deshaun Watson, I'm worried about him this week against that Ravens front, and I'm worried about the Texans O-line, but Watson will find a way. No panic.
I'm chilling because I just think Deshaun Watson is going to probably be the guy that can lift an offense no matter what's around him. But I would say for all the people that kind of wrote off DeAndre Hopkins in Arizona, thinking he's just going to be like a guy that puts up a 5-44-0 line week after.
Who said that?
I think people were cold on him on fantasy, not saying that he's not a good player, but that he was going to be de-emphasized in a four-wide receiver
offense.
If you're
going to call out Silva, just say the name, you know?
Well, Silva's not alone. I mean, I think his value went down. And the logic was there, but then you watch the game, and DeAndre Hopkins
Silva
is DeAndre Hopkins.
About that.
So ultimately what the Texans did was they removed a complete raging star wide receiver from their offense. So I'd be more panicked about some of the decision making. And then there's the backlash where it's like, now let's praise Bill O'Brien. And he went and got David Johnson. Well, thanks. I know which player I'd rather have right now. And so I don't like around Deshaun Watson at all. I like the player.
Well, David Johnson looked way better than he did last year.
Please deliberate this trade again.
No, we don't. But we were on Thursday night and everyone else was. It's like, maybe.
Doesn't mean it's a good trade.
He is not. I would never in my life want him over DeAndre Hopkins.
That's the point I'm trying to make. Like, can we all as a people agree? And I think we have terrible trade, but now the season started and this man's on this team and this man's on that team. And I thought David Johnson did look really good. And I think Will Fuller, assuming he stays healthy, is going to end up with numbers that could even rival what Hopkins did last year in Houston. So I'm going to say chill. I think they're a worse team, and that doesn't take a brilliant analyst to point that out. But I still think with Deshaun Watson, he's so special that I think the offense is going to figure it out. It's such a – it's borderline unfair when you send these teams on the road to the defending champions in their season opener on a Thursday night. It feels like 9 times out of 10, they don't have any chance, and that's how it felt for Houston. I can't wait to see them in a more normalized environment.
Well, how about Baltimore this week? What did O'Brien do to get the schedule makers mad? It's one reason why.
Bill's done a lot.
I'm worried about the Texans just because of their schedule and why Jimmy G, even though I don't believe in him, it's like their schedule is very forgiving the next couple of weeks, just hanging out in MetLife Stadium and playing the Dolphins soon. It's pretty easy.
Pretty nice. Pretty nice. All right, let's go around the horn one more time quickly. I hope you guys had a chance to watch this game. I imagine you did. The Packers-Vikings week one. We all know what Aaron Rodgers did and what a fun thing that was to watch him turn into Aaron Rodgers again. But I want to talk about the Vikings apocalypse. I'm not going to get too worked up about the offensive side of the ball because it was a weird game where the defense couldn't get off the field. And then by the time Kirk Cousins and this Stephon Diggs free offense went to work, the game script had kind of flipped. It just was a little wonky. But the defense wasn't competitive in this game. And maybe it gets better with Danielle Hunter when he comes back. But for 1 week at least, this was non-competitive, both in the trenches and in the secondary. Greg, is it time to panic or chill about the Vikings as a legit contender potential?
Well, the way you phrase that is tricky. I'm going to chill because of Mike Zimmer's track record, coaching up defense for decades, really. And especially the secondary, I think, has enough talent. The linebackers are good. The defensive line is a big-time concern because even when Hunter gets back, it was their interior that was just blown off the ball and are a bunch of, rotation guys in the past or new players and don't look that talented. And yeah, you got Ngakoue and Hunter, but that does not make, an entire defensive line. So that's a problem, but I think they'll be able to scheme their way into it and coach their way up as the season goes along.
Well, I'm panicking. If I'm a Vikings fan, I'm panicking.
You love panicking about the Vikings.
Yeah, because I think the ceiling...
Hung up about that team of ATN all these years later.
No, I'm just looking at the team I watched on Sunday, and the team that I watched, the floor version of the team that I watched last year. And to be the Vikings teams that really had a chance, a lot of it just started with your defense. And there's too much happening there right now. And yeah, you played a great opponent, but not a lot of people expected Aaron Rodgers to do that in week one. That's why it's a raging story that Aaron Rodgers came out and looked like he had been shotgunned out of like a 2012 cannon. So, I mean, if I'm Minnesota, I'm freaking because you're probably like a 9-7 team and it's the same old story, or you're 8-8 or you're one and done. And I mean, I think finally if you're in Minnesota, you have to say the ceiling needs to be higher, and there's reason to panic if the organization is going to float along being one of the, you know, fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh best teams in their conference.
I'm on the opposite side of the spectrum on this. I'm in a total chill scenario. Bad game. They got caught with their pants down in week one, and Aaron Rodgers with something to prove was, I think, a really bad combination. But the coaching is good. The roster is good. And yes, I agree with you, Mark, that this team seems to have a couple stinkers in them every year. They got one out of the way in week one. I think this is a double-digit win team, and
wow.
I think we'll be coming out of week two after they perform well, being like, okay, things are back on track. Maybe. That's what I think. All right, who's up?
I can go. Okay. I'll throw the Chargers offense out there. Whether we're panicking or chilling about a Chargers offense who, you know, despite Joe Burrow having his struggles, was trailing until very late in the game against the Bengals defense without a lot of talent. Sessler, panic or chill?
Well, here's the thing. I don't think – I'm panicking. I think the Chargers, shame on them if they thought they were going to get a whole lot more out of this whole thing. I watched that game, you know, partly to check out the Bengals for TNF. Tyrod Taylor, great guy, fun guy on Hard Knocks, we all agree. A campaign killer. You're going to have to make a switch at some point.
Oof,
and everyone, you know, the one
Why
thing
is
that
it
bugs
all on
me,
him?
The one thing that bugs me a little bit is that the coaching staff talks about all these things that Tyrod Taylor can bring to the offense. What I see is what he takes away from an offense. I think he's a mobile guy. That's great, but that's not that big of a differentiator in terms of what Tyrod Taylor is doing with that these days. They're a field goal offense with him. Austin Ekeler has been essentially like de-emphasized. They don't check down to him in the passing game. Anthony Lynn basically said we're not going to do that with Anthony Lynn with Ekeler as much this year. That's your best player. Mike Williams makes a few amazing grabs in that game, but if he doesn't, like, the offense is a stink bomb. And then you have a rookie quarterback among them all that I think I want to see it, but just does not seem completely ready for prime time. Might be shoved into the fire too soon. It's not a great situation. You were 5-11 last year. What are you supposed to be doing in the NFL? Why was Tyrod Taylor advertised to us as a starter? I never really bought it to begin with.
I'm going to chill, but only because I didn't come into the season thinking the offense was going to be very good. And I think it's an offense that on most games, you're going to be lucky if they give you 23 points. You know, I feel like their ceiling most weeks is going to be hoping to win a lot of like 20 to 13 games, 23-20. And this was a step below that. And it's in week one, you know, on the road. So I think they'll be better than they were in week one. I think Tyrod Taylor will be better. I think Austin Ekeler will get more involved and they'll figure out ways to do it because I like Anthony Lynn. But this is who the Chargers are until and if Justin Herbert can play the guitar.
Mm. I'm panicking a little about the approach because it was the third highest percentage of runs Anthony Lynn has had. This is what he wants to do. He's told you. They have three tight ends on the field half the time. He just wants to run out. They were losing in the game, and they had the highest percent. Like, he is living out his dream. He's so
good.
Happy to be done with Phillip Rivers so he can play the style of football he wants. And I don't know if that style of football works.
I think I mentioned this before the season started, but it was so odd to me that Phillip Rivers' name never came up once in five episodes of Hard Knocks.
You're right.
That was kind of an underrated subplot that there was bad blood behind the scenes, and that was a bit of a messy divorce. And it played out because when you have a legendary quarterback in your team's history that goes away after 18 years or whatever it was, and then it's not even something that people bring up his name out of respect. No, there's something cooking behind the scenes there, and maybe Anthony Lynn shouldn't have been so excited.
Can I, Dan, one thing that you said, because this is sort of where my problem is, because I love Anthony Lynn. I felt so differently about him after watching Hard Knocks. I like the whole team. I like Tyrod Taylor, but you go into a season saying we want to win games 19-16. That's who we want to be. It's 2020. It feels to me like it's not Tyrod Taylor's fault necessarily.
Use his legs. Maybe those legs aren't. He used to be maybe the second best running quarterback in the entire NFL. He was an electric runner, and you just haven't
seen it. When there were a lot fewer
of
them, too, though.
They don't really use it anymore. I haven't seen it in a few years, put it that way.
He's only about, I think he's 31 maybe, and he hasn't sustained any major injuries in recent years. I would imagine the athleticism is still there. Does anybody have one more before we move on?
I'd have a quick one for you. Yeah. I mean, because this one I kind of go both ways, because I don't know how much wiggle room you have to give games away. The Cowboys' offensive line, it's banged up. I don't think Tyron Smith – people just say, you know, you watch a prime time, oh, it's Tyron Smith. Well, yeah, but it's not the same Tyron Smith, okay? Joe Looney, these guys were fine on Sunday night, but if you go look at the scores, PFF, and sort of the overall feel, your right side, Connor Williams and Terrence Steele were hot messes. You don't have Lael Collins back for a while. You've lost Blake Jarwin at tight end, so you're losing – creativity in terms of how you can block. And when we think of offensive lines, I think sometimes, you know, if you're just sort of more watching it from year to year, you get caught in what a team has been characteristically. Like, this is not the Cowboys offensive line of old. And I think it affects Dak Prescott. Panic or chill?
I would say that panic, in the sense that there was a time where it doesn't matter who they were playing, they're going to handle their business on that front. But that might be over now. And when you get an Aaron Donald-led defensive line, and he was like bullying Zach Martin even on Sunday night, they might have gotten to the point where they're vulnerable against truly great lines, but still will be able to hold their own against everyone else. So overall, a chill, but with an acknowledgement that it's not the same team anymore.
I'm going to chill just because I think the offensive personnel can mostly make up for it. There are other points of concern for me on this team, but I'm gonna have some faith in Dak and those receivers and Zeke to just make up for it. You're right, the line's not going to be the same. Now my expectations are not there, but as long as the line can be average, I think the other players can lift them up.
Okay, last quick one before we get to Thursday night preview. Panic or chill, Chris Berman's grip on the cultural zeitgeist.
Gardner, Minshew!
You know, across my mind.
We were, Jet and I were watching the game last night, and I'm sitting in this beanbag that we have, and she's on the couch, and we both look at each other like, what the just happened? Like, who did we have
this
stroke?
This is television history. Ricky.
No, this hits on, Ricky's hitting on something that's interesting to me because. Erica and Jet are obviously significantly younger than us. They're in their 20s, and they didn't come from the generation where Chris Berman was famous for doing things like
Gardner Minshew.
He's from a bygone era, and now when you bring him up, you take him out of mothballs and throw him on this halftime show on ESPN. There's going to be a lot of people that were born like after 1990 that don't even have the context to understand what the hell is going on. And I just don't think it's for us. It's supposed to be nostalgia driven. And I guess mileage varies on that. But for everyone else, it's like a total WTF. I don't know if ESPN has pieced that together yet.
For me, like, it is nostalgic, but I can separate from the fact that, like, I'd be panicking over, in general, ESPN's decisions about their primetime football over the past couple years, and that this still seems like something that they're sitting around in production meetings saying, this sings, this is how you
nowhere.
Do 2020 football.
Well, go ahead, Ricky.
So serious, like, I'm the halftime, and here we are, and, you know, it's going to be a tough one, and it's, like, very quiet, and then he's like, out of nowhere, and I was like, what is happening?
Well, here's the thing, though. He's been on that halftime show permanently. Forever. He's never not been on that halftime show, and I'm with you. It's a little much, but hey, you know, NFL primetime's still going, and Tom Jackson understandably decided to opt out this year because of COVID and staying safe, and so you're adding a little bit of younger blood with Booger, and so it's Berman and Booger brings the zeitgeist to you, Dan.
That's your sell? Okay. Poor Wait, Booger. Is that a panic or is that a chill?
I'm along for the ride.
The website.
This might be bad.
The website Awful Announcing, which does good media criticism, put it very well. I thought they used to cover the Chris Berman late Monday night games with great fervor because of how they often went off the rails in those last few years. They called the decision to continue keeping Berman on the air long after his heyday, institutional hubris.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to it. Thursday night football. And by the way, I say that having grown up on Chris Berman, and I've totally stole the G-Men. And some people think that that's me being original. No, I just stole that from Chris Berman, who did it a million times in the 90s on ESPN primetime. So all due respect to the big man ultimately, but we're just having some fun here. All right. Thursday night football, Cleveland Browns, Cincinnati Bengals. Mark, I imagine if we extended the segment Panic or Chill into this conversation, I have an idea where you would fall.
Yeah, I mean, I think from the world of, you know, Browns hot and cold stuff, it's a little panicky. They just didn't show up at all on Sunday. I couldn't be more concerned about how long it's going to take this offense to get its wheels going. When you're watching other first-year head coaches come out and move parts around, I mean, I know that like the Carolina Panthers fell apart on that last play there, but Matt Rhule, who people thought it's going to take 10 weeks for this team to get together, that offense was fun to watch, I thought, and Cleveland's was the opposite. Here's the thing, and I'm not going to filibuster here. Austin Seibert gets cut for another terrible opener. He gets picked up by the Bengals. I have seen this act in this movie 5,000 times.
Thing.
No, but this is like Greg. You got to understand something, Greg. It's a team that is getting killed right now because everyone thinks Odell Beckham wants to get traded again, or they want to trade Odell Beckham because Mike Francesa put a tweet out. Okay, everyone left and right is ready to pounce on Baker Mayfield and destroy him. This is the last thing I want happening on national television. I want the team to have a chance to grow.
What did Mike Francesa tweet? I don't think anybody listens to Francesa.
He said Beckham was available.
It's all over the place now, and it's like, what's going on with Beckham?
I wait to hear from Mike Lombardi before I decide which of the aging football pundits.
It's fair. We keep saying we want to watch quarterbacks that make teams fun. We want to watch fun teams. And, you know, you sign up for one and you're not going to walk away. I'm not walking away from them. But this is a Black Mirror scenario that has happened so many times during the course of our podcast. And it really dips into kind of evil feelings at points where I'm just like, this is not enjoyable. And the last thing I want is to have Twitter going absolutely nuts. It's all the same characters freaking out about Joe Burrow topping Baker Mayfield on Thursday night, all the little chucklers. And it's like, it's not fun. It's not fun being a fan of this. There's 29 more interesting, intriguing, fun teams right now.
Well, they weren't fun. That's for sure. I only was making a little light of the cyber thing because I saw Tony Grossi, who's covered them forever, you know, say the same thing. It's like, oh, you know, they should have like waited an extra day before they cut Seibert because now it's going to come back to haunt them. If Browns fans are worrying that cutting Seibert is going to be the thing that makes or break, like if Seibert's your problem,
Greg,
who cares? Then
you're looking at it from the POV of like a technocrat on whether or not Austin Seibert is a good roster addition. It's the kicker that you cut 48 hours before beating you on Thursday night.
But it's also,
it doesn't
matter.
It has nothing to do with the person or the player.
I
don't want to sound flip here, Mark, but if Seibert ends up killing you, that probably means you at least played a close competitive game. And teams like the Browns, and my Jets are included in that, didn't even compete in week one. So maybe that is progress, even if that happens. But yeah, I think this is going to be, because that week two Thursday game is sneaky, way up there in terms of visibility because people are still in love with the fact that football's back and it's the only game. And if Baker Mayfield and this offense, and it's not all on Baker, it's a whole thing, but he is at the front of it. And Odell Beckham certainly is prominently involved with this too after he bombed out in week one. They need to deliver here. They need to step up and put points on the board and look dangerous or whatever the hell you want to walk in silence, do whatever you got to do, but just put some points on the board and don't put all the pressure on your defense to stop Joe Burrow because you don't want that to happen. You know what? Because that happened to me on Thursday Night Football. In fact, my team, when Baker came in against the Jets when he was a rookie and he started getting confident and he was feeling it in prime time under the lights, put some points on the board and put the rookie quarterback in a spot where maybe the game script is off and he has to throw the ball more than he wants and you start getting some turnovers. don't bomb out on offense here, because that's when you're really going to put yourself in position for another embarrassing game.
Yeah, my thing more, Mark, is it's just not about cyber. It's about not being an embarrassment on offense, because last week's game, they were the most disappointing team, I thought, in week one. That was straight out of the Freddie Kitchens, you know, best of list. I mean, they couldn't have made more mental mistakes. You got Baker and Stefanski talking about what play they want to run on 4th-and-1 with about 6 seconds on the play clock, you know, left before they like start sprinting in and try to stay. Like, everything was sloppy. And I do go back to the Mayfield Beckham connection. It's not being unfair to them. They, when he throws it to Odell Beckham, bad things happen, and they got to fix that. They got to fix it fast, because that was one of the worst, like one of the worst quarterback to wide receiver connections in the league last week was Mayfield to Beckham. Beckham dropping passes. He did a ton of that last year. Mental mistakes. Mayfield's missing throws even when he is protected. Offensive line played well. Running game was good. That wasn't the problem. So I'm not panicking either, because it's only 1 week. But it was about as bad as a week one as you can get. And I think the Thursday game is also tricky, Dan, because you have to play two games in 5 days after not playing anything all season. You are not conditioned for that. And so it's a recipe for more ugly football.
I mean, if I were to panic about the Bengals, to flip it to them for 1 minute, I mean, their offensive line in that game against the Chargers, and I get that you're playing a cast of characters from the Los Angeles side, was one of the worst games I've seen by an offensive line. And you know, more credit to Joe Burrow for even surviving and making a few plays down the stretch. Joe Burrow was not perfect. I keep hearing that Joe Burrow had this great debut.
No.
I mean, he was forced into some really bad decisions and looked like a deer in headlights, and also made some great throws where you saw what Joe Burrow can be. I don't know if I trust Cleveland's defense to make any sort of impact the way the Chargers did. That could open things up for Joe Burrow. AJ Green looked pretty good. I mean, I could see that connection growing. And I'll say this last thing about Odell Beckham, that the last time Baker Mayfield was really dangerous was before Odell Beckham was on this team. That's 2018. And that's when Baker Mayfield was the unquestioned alpha male of the Browns. And I do wonder a little bit about this. What I see with Odell Beckham, and you can tell me if you see something different, is Baker feeding it to Beckham when it doesn't always make sense. And Beckham just making terrible drops in the last game. I mean, the chemistry was
stepping
totally
out of
not
bounds.
There.
I mean, Landry's been a better player for Cleveland by far.
Landry has been a much better player.
And he arrived at the
same
time. It's more reliable. He's been better. I don't see why that should continue forever. It really shouldn't, but that's just been the facts.
I think that was ignored when Beckham got traded to the Browns, and everybody saw it as the heist of the century. It's like the Giants had to deal with a lot of crap with Beckham, and part of his whole thing is keep him happy, get him the ball. Everything has to be right. But when things aren't going well, is Beckham the type of guy that makes a team better, or does he drag you down further? Through 17 games of the experience, I'm not sold on the guy. I guess I never really have. But it's going to be a fun game. Maybe not for you, Mark, and I get it, because I'd feel the same as you, especially when you're vulnerable after week one. But to people that are less connected to the two teams, it's a fun matchup, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's one of the better Thursday night football games we'll get all year. Hopefully it plays out that way.
I'm with you. It's a big game, too. You can wipe it all away. 1-1 feels great. I know you're afraid that this is the worst-case scenario, losing the Bengals, but the flip side of it is you're playing a team that's not that talented and is beatable, and the Browns just have to find a way to beat them. I'm kind of shocked the Browns are as heavily favored as they are. I mean,
what are the desert people saying?
Yeah, what's happening
It's borderline not lockable, which seems crazy, but
that's
not quite.
That's
not
absurd
quite.
To me.
That is absurd to me, too. But I don't think the Bengals really did much to impress in week one in any way. And so that should make you feel a little better.
Okay, let's get out of here. Reminder, Thursday will be our week two preview episode. Saturday morning on NFL Network, you'll have the network program, which is a version of the preview episode. Please check that out. And of course, Thursday night, I don't know, Mark, you going to be with us? Rain or shine, Thursday night recap?
TBD.
I mean,
I'll be in my house, so why not? I mean, you know, if it goes horribly, I think it would lack nobility to not show up. I mean, it's not like this is my first experience with the Browns dropping a gigantic egg on like a primetime game or big spot, so I'll be there.
By the way, it's cathartic to be able to speak about your team like this, Mark, but
it is another reminder that you've told us 14 times in the offseason that you weren't that on board, that you weren't that plugged in, and I could feel how much this game means to you. So I sincerely hope it goes well.
Thank you. I also have been saying for over a month that they would start 0-2.
I know. You're protecting yourself.
I am actually just predicting probably the future. And everyone's like, no, Mark, like, you just have to be optimistic. It's like, excuse me, 34 years into this Browns, like rooting for the Browns thing, I kind of have a grasp on like impending doom.
But I was going to say, like, if you already knew they were going to go 0-2, why are you so passionately upset right now? I understand that's the struggle within a true fan.
Because it's different when it's just this thing in the clouds in August. Now it's like everyone's starting to, here we come with all the laughter and the giggles.
Turn off Twitter for the night. Just watch it with your boys or something.
I'm either going to turn it off or I'm going to make a change on Twitter.
Those texts, the texts that could come on Thursday night.
I'm not going to be
or
texting
the tweets.
People.
Oh, there's tweets that we're going to have to be like, hey, you got to delete this, Mark. You got to take this down. Be like,
no, it's not even interesting to tweet negatively about the Browns at this point. So
yeah, but we'll get some. I'll be getting texts like, hey, have you heard from Mark? Like, is he okay? Like, because you'll tweeted like wandering the streets with my children dragging behind me, like never returning. Like,
no, maybe.
Check out our stuff on NFL.com. Greg has his great end of Sunday wrap-up. And do you have something else that files before week two, Greg?
I got the picks, picking games this year.
Your pick'em games and also the network show. Power rankings are up. They go live every Tuesday morning. And very excited, me and Matt Money Smith are on the network every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific with the power ranking show. And Sizzler, you have your weekly column as well.
Hot or not, it's sort of just things that I think are cool, that I like, things I think should be shot into the space, into deep space.
I think
and Eric
you're
and
hot
I are doing
that,
a little weekly fantasy thing that we basically write 4 minutes before we do it. So
fun.
Hot like or not, that's how Facebook started, right? You know, it's,
yeah.
That was.
Well, I hope this has a similar
trajectory. That might be some IP. Might be an IP issue, but you guys work that out. Okay, that's it. This is Dan Hansen signing off for Quiet Storm. The old boss, Ricky Hollywood. Hang in there, buddy. Till Thursday.
If AJ Green didn't have that like pass interference push off and got that touchdown, like we would have been talking completely different about the Bengals, I think.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. That's cool.
Yeah, but like at the
end. Erica's right though. Erica's right. If he would have went down the field, Burrow, and threw the game-winning touchdown
with that toe drop, it would have been so
different.
Yeah,
people would have been going nuts.